Welcome to The Softer Side of Finance, a weekly show where Anders Leo Lindberg explains how the finance function can create more value through the human dimensions of people, organisation and culture, with a global audience on LinkedIn Audio. Recorded as a live session, anyone can join in. Raise your hand and the stage is yours. Fancy joining Anders? Head over to LinkedIn and sign up for the next event. For now, here's what you've missed so far.
Welcome to another episode of The Softer Side of Finance. Today's topic is the importance of your strategic assumptions. It's part of the bigger series called the Planning and Forecasting Manifesto, which is also an ebook that we're going to be putting out. And we're going through the 10 commandments of planning and forecasting. I'll be going for an article that was published some time ago, and I'll be sure to leave a link to the article on the event page after this event. So all good plans start with the hypothesis asking, what would have to be true for our plan to be good? The strategy and goals against which the plans are created need to be translated into actual resources, targets, and actions for shorter timeframes. And the assumptions made to start quantifying these are not the preamble to planning, but its foundation. Hypothesis-driven planning is common in the world of software development. It allows companies to experiment with different viable options to deliver what the customer needs, adjusting assumptions with each feedback cycle. This agility prevents the all-too-notorious scenario of a large project being delivered after years of work and not meeting the requirements that evolved between commissioning and completion. What if your carefully constructed budget fell into this trap? It's not unknown for companies to push forward with the big plan without regularly reviewing the assumptions that underpin it. If the business environment changes, assumptions may no longer be valid. And these huge vessels, companies, businesses, usually take time to change course. We want our organizations to turn like a speedboat, pivot in the face of change, and take advantage of new opportunities. But ask yourselves this, what assumptions underline your strategy? Do you know? Are they documented? Are you frequently looking at them? Are you asking yourselves, do they still make sense? Are we still on track to reach the strategy? Or is the next year going to be another hair on the back? What I mean is, we forecast we're going to be on track, but actually the development is flat. That's not how we deliver on our strategy. And it's in the assumptions that we can track in as close to real time as possible, if we are on track or not. That's when we know that we need to do something differently, or at least assess if we're still doing the right thing. Not necessarily at the next quarterly business review or at the next annual review in the board. No, as soon as reality has moved too far off course. So we need to be championing hypothesis-driven planning. This process runs through a classic feedback loop. But rather than focusing on the numbers, it assesses the effectiveness of otherwise of the assumptions that gave us the numbers. Start by looking beyond your forecast and consider what made you select particular variables for your sensitivity analysis, your what-if scenarios. Now turn the process on its head for the next round of planning and actively define your assumptions before running any numbers. What I mean with that is, any strategy consists of making choices. Choices between where to play and how to win in those markets, based on the good old playing to win strategy framework from Roger Martin. If you're not making any choices, you don't have a strategy. So making choices is the beginning. But all choices come with assumptions of why you make this choice and another choice. And those are the assumptions that are critical to document and use to assess if your business is on track. And I can see we have Faisal wanting to come to the stage. So if you want to do like Faisal, come to the stage, feel free to raise your hand at this point. We'll bring you up to share your perspective and ask questions.
Hello, I'm Faisal Abu Taha, Chief Financial Officer here in Saudi Arabia, based in Riyadh. I would like to thank you for this topic, this important topic. And what I want to ask you about, if there is a reference about this in this topic you have. Thank you.
Yeah, so the first reference is the Playing to Win strategy framework, which is made by A.J. Lafferty, former CEO of Procter & Gamble, and Roger Martin, which is one of the leading management gurus in the world. So highly recommend that book to anyone who wants to get more into strategy and also how to follow up on strategy, ensuring that we are winning. So that would be the main reference here. But also we have published the 10 Commandments of Planning and Forecasting, which later comes out as an ebook called the Planning and Forecasting Manifesto. So once that comes out, of course, we will be shouting about that on social channels.
Okay, thank you very much for the clarification. Thank you.
You are welcome, Faisal. Thanks for coming up on the stage. All right. So as we mentioned, try to turn the process on its head and define your assumptions before running the numbers. So first look at what conditions would have to be true for the plan that you are considering to be a good plan. In software development, just to keep using that analogy, the goal may be more users downloading an app. The company's own market research might indicate that users like to be able to choose the background color of their app. The hypothesis is that introducing this feature will make the software more attractive and more likely to be downloaded, i.e. purchased. Next, it's time to experiment, to isolate and test the assumption as the variable that it is. Document the assumption to show that this plan has been tested. Plan for the resources that are needed and the action that the company will take. Define the success criteria. After a month or quarter or year, what uplift in sales or reduction in cost will show that this plan is a good plan. And of course, you probably don't have a year to test before you can start activating your strategy. But you might be able to run smaller experiments to test if this is a good strategy. Or you might be able to refer to previous companies that have done this, or maybe companies in adjacent industries. But if you don't test, or at least have some good models running around this, you might be challenged in actually having quality discussions around what choices to make. I can see Daniel wants to come on stage as well. We'll just bring Daniel up too. Daniel, welcome to the stage. Feel free to introduce yourself.
Hello.
And share your question or perspective.
Oh, yes. Hello, Anders. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, Daniel. How are you?
Yes, I'm a financial analyst. It's great to be on your show. This is actually my second time participating on your show.
Great.
Yeah, I'm a big fan. So I have a question for you, actually. How do you see the significance of FP&A progress over time? And is it given the necessary importance currently, in your opinion? Or does it still deserve more attention, more to be integrated into finance teams?
That's a great question, Daniel. I think my reference point for this is always a survey that was done in 2019 by a company called Protivity. They had asked CFOs if they were happy with the return on investment from the FP&A teams. Now, of course, some may say that CFOs are maybe a bit conservative in their approach to things, and it would be difficult to get a 10 out of 10 score from them. But 71% said that they were not happy with the return on investment from the FP&A teams. And that's, of course, a very poor number. So in that sense, we need to put a lot more emphasis on the potential of FP&A. I call this the trillion-dollar opportunity. If FP&A teams could do what we want them to do and what we are talking about as consultants and everything else, they could do that. We could create at least value to the tune of $1 trillion globally across all companies. So we are not there. We haven't seen enough progress. But I think we know what we're aiming for. And we just need to keep pushing in that direction. And we are seeing improvements, but maybe not fast enough. But thanks a lot for asking that question, Daniel.
Great. Thanks a lot, Anders.
You're welcome. So once you have those assumptions nailed down, you need to track them and follow up. So when the results are in, of course, it's time to review and feedback not only on the classic variances, but on the underlying hypothesis that you have tested. The classic variances are, of course, important, of course, but there is a need to understand how effectively resources have been used and managed. And then you need to look back at the experiment to decide whether the hypothesis should be accepted. Yes, we have a great plan. It's going to work for our strategy. Let's push ahead. Or continue along the same path, or reject it, and a new hypothesis developed. Documenting this entire end-to-end process is vital. We want to emulate success, and we have no wish to repeat failures, particularly where hypotheses are intuitive. There's a danger of falling back on the same misconception, or worse, losing track of the one thing that made this plan a good plan. And let me get a bit more concrete on this. Not only should you document your assumptions, you should also establish what I call confidence intervals. So intervals in which you are comfortable for reality to move. Let's take inflation. It's a great example, right? So let's say in your strategy or plan, inflation needs to move between 1 to 4%, probably a reasonable measure anyway. Today, inflation is, in some countries, 10%. So inflation is much higher than your confidence interval, what you're comfortable within moving. And as soon as it moved outside the 5%, that should trigger a conversation in the management team. Are we still on the right track? Do we need to take mitigating actions? Do we need to change course? What can we do to adapt to the fact that reality is now very much different compared to where we expected it to be? And you can set this up as a tracking system in a close to real time possible. Now, some numbers might not be available every second. Maybe it's a weekly, even a monthly cycle. But as soon as it's available, you can see whether it falls within the interval or not. Because if it falls within the interval, continue by all means. And of course, then if your actual results show that you are still off track, you need to understand why, what happened. Maybe there's an assumption that you didn't think about that you need to start tracking. But that's your strategic compass. And what I want you to ask yourself at this point is, do you have a formal system for documenting the hypotheses that underpin every plan or every what-if scenario and recording the effectiveness? Do you have the confidence intervals? Are you tracking this? Think about that question and then come to the stage to share your thoughts. I can see Kieran wants to come up as well. We'll bring Kieran up. Kieran, welcome to the stage. Feel free to introduce yourself and share your perspective or ask a question.
Hello, Andrew. This is the second time we are meeting on this forum. My question is, you have mentioned about testing the actuals against the intervals and stuff with regard to the inflation and things. So what statistical techniques do you suggest? Are you referring to the Monte Carlo analysis against the actuals to check against the assumptions that are being, whether which is falling within the intervals and stuff, or is it more of a theoretical aspect?
Great question, Kieran. And I think there can be multiple ways of doing this. You could do it as a desktop analysis where scenario modeling or even Monte Carlo simulations could play into it. You could also go interview people either within the company or even outside the company. What do they think about the assumptions that you're making? Do they make sense in their perspective? Right. So there's many different data points that you can gather, and you can sort of make a plan and say, okay, you know, we have a hypothesis that we want to test. We've made some ideas, assumptions about it. We're now going to do data analysis. We're going to talk to three people, and then we are going to study some industry research, and all these data sources will bring that together in a synthesis that will say, probably this hypothesis makes sense. Let's go ahead. Or once we are done with it, we figure out it doesn't seem so likely. So maybe we need to go back to the drawing board, right? So many different ways that you can explore this.
Okay, yep, makes sense.
Thanks a lot, Kieran, for coming up to ask your question. Great stuff. So in terms of documenting your assumptions for your strategy, at least from my perspective, it's something that very few companies do. Maybe they talk about it in the strategy or in the annual planning meeting, but they often find themselves hidden away in a drawer afterwards. And I think that's a shame. because it means it takes 3, 6, maybe even 12 months to understand if we're actually delivering on our strategy or not. And this comes with a huge price tag. Whether you are in the top performing brackets of your strategy compared to competitors and others, the value creation differential, if you will, is huge. Top 20% goes back to the good old 80-20 principle, but top 20% creates so much more value than all the rest of the companies together. Now, don't take my word for it. This is McKinsey having done this analysis. And most strategies fail to realize the potential we saw in them in the beginning. And in my mind, of course, I'm biased being a finance and FP&A professional, but in my mind, it's an FP&A to ensure that doesn't happen. We instill the right feedback loop. We document the assumptions and track them in as close to real time as possible. We'll be able to have the right conversations at the right time with the right business leaders to ensure we either change course or redirect, or maybe take some mitigating actions. Daniel, it seemed like you wanted to share something as well.
Yes, I didn't want to interrupt you. So I was thinking, if I want to set up an FP&A team in a company for the first time, what do you think are the key steps that I have to go through? And what are the must-have resources for that to happen?
Basically speaking, two key steps or key, let's say, outputs for an FP&A team. One is to generate insights, new perspectives, recommendations about what to do differently. And the second bit is to develop your influence. Because if you have no influence, you might as well go home. Now, to generate insights, of course, it depends on the size of the company. You know, this comes down to your ability to do data analytics, problem solving, sometimes even product management, but also your understanding of the business, of risk management and business strategy. So that's the insight generation. And you need someone in the team that is good at that. But you also need the influencing bit, be able to communicate, partner with business leaders, influence their decisions, change leadership, and also self-leadership. And of course, if you're the leader of that team, you need to be a good role model of the behaviors you want the team to have in order to make it happen.
So would a team suffice, or does it have to have some kind of its own department or sub-department level?
Again, it depends on how big the company is, right? In most companies, small and mid-sized companies, maybe it's just one person or just a few people, and they will have to do most of the work, everything from being able to set up a database in the right way so you can pull the numbers to actually go and then communicate to the CEO. In the bigger companies, I definitely argue that you should set up a center of excellence that can do the insight generation or at least the bulk work of the analysis. And then you have a senior FP&A professionals that sit close to business leaders can influence their decision-making.
All right, thanks.
You're welcome. Great stuff. If someone has a last question or perspective they want to share, now is the time. Raj coming up as well. We'll bring Raj up to the stage as the last person today. Raj, welcome to the stage. Feel free to introduce yourself and ask your question or share a perspective.
Thank you so much for giving me the chance. So this question can be outside the scope of this training, but this question is relevant in my opinion. So the question is about because every organization is focusing on like AI or the RPA, like robotic process automation or artificial intelligence. So do we require any training for us? So the current FP&A professional have to get their courses so that we can save our future, because the upcoming years, the AI will has a big impact in the corporates.
Yeah, thanks for sharing, Raj. And it's a very broad question and something we may struggle with tackling in just a minute here. But I think what I want FP&A professionals to become is what I call technos. So people that know what technology is available out there and how it can benefit them and their company. They might not be experts in implementing it, but now with low-code, no-code tools, it's very easy these days. And I think the most important bit about these tools is that they will enable us to spend more time actually discussing with business leaders what to do about the analysis that we see and how we can make it happen, rather than the number crunching itself. Because all the FP&A teams I speak to, they're busy crunching the numbers and have way too little time actually, let's say, using the numbers for something. So I think AI is going to be great. It is great already, but it can help us with lots of different things in the future. And we should definitely take advantage of that.
Thank you so much, Anders.
You are welcome, Raj. So at this point, I want to thank Kiran, Faisal, Daniel, Raj for coming on stage, sharing perspectives, asking questions, making this show a great show. It wouldn't be the same without you. And of course, thank you to everyone for listening in. We'll be back next week with a new episode of The Softer Side of Finance, continuing with the 10 Commandments of Planning and Forecasting. I hope you enjoyed the show. Hope to see you again next week, and have a great rest of the day or day ahead.
You've been listening to The Softer Side of Finance, a weekly show recorded live on LinkedIn Audio. Don't forget to subscribe to stay updated on how the finance function can create more value. And why not join Anders every Monday on LinkedIn to share your own views and appear in the next episode?